We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
The following program has been pre-recorded. Thanks for tuning in this weekend to Let's Talk Portland, Odyssey Portland's weekly public affairs program. I'm Gary Bloxham. This time, we're going to talk about the ways schools around the Portland metro area and the rest of the state are addressing the mental, emotional, and social challenges for students this school year. On the show this time, I would like to welcome Dr. B. Grace Bullock. Dr. Bullock is the Senior Mental Health Officer at the Oregon Department of Education. Hello, Dr. Bullock. Welcome to Let's Talk Portland.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I thought we'd get started today by having you tell us about yourself. What do you do and how did you get there?
Oh, that's an interesting question. What do I do? Well, I'm serving, as you said, as the Senior Mental Health Officer for the Oregon Department of Education. I'm a psychologist by training and have been working in Oregon for, gosh, over 20 years now. I came to this position because ODE really recognized that we needed a center of mental health and education, and that it was important to have, you know, people within the agency that could think more systemically and globally about how we center and embed mental health in schools, and also to really take advantage of all the beautiful work that's being done already and find a way to coordinate that in a hopefully a more effective way.
How long have you been with the Oregon Department of Education?
I am closing in on 2 years, so I started not too long before COVID.
I see. So you've come in at a pretty crucial time.
I did, and of course none of us anticipated it, but as it turned out, I think that, you know, it's allowed us to have the opportunity to really reflect on what it is that we're doing in education and across the state, and really examine, you know, where we need to grow, where are the growth points, and also it's given us an opportunity to make changes, I think, in a much more rapid way to respond to the needs of families than we might have had it been just business as usual.
Mental health lately has really seemed to come to the forefront, and are you finding that people are talking more about mental health?
Absolutely. Even when I started at ODE a couple of years ago, I think that the term mental health was often equated with mental illness. And so there was more of a stigma, I think, than there is now around mental health. And, you know, we've also had the help of a lot of, you know, prominent athletes and other celebrities that are talking about their challenges with mental health. And I think that's brought the conversation more into the mainstream.
And those athletes and celebrities are talking about it in a real way. They're not sugarcoating it. They're really putting themselves out there.
Yes, and I really appreciate that. I think that one of the challenges that we've had just in the field of mental health is the notion that if you are experiencing symptoms, if you're feeling sad or frustrated, angry, anxious, that somehow there's something wrong with you. And I think that, you know, what we know from the research is that the emotions that we experience are part of how we respond to life events. So it's nice to see people talking about their challenges, because I think that we've had this illusion that everyone is doing really well except us. And it's good to bring that conversation into the mainstream.
Yeah, like I've heard several times, it's okay to not be okay.
Absolutely, especially now. I think if there was ever a time to be not okay, it would be during a global pandemic.
When we can all relate to it, right?
So absolutely.
So let's talk about some of the challenges that kids are facing right now. What are you hearing out there?
You know, kids are beautiful receptors of their environment and information, and also, you know, they don't have the benefit of having years worth of experience of seeing that when things are really difficult and challenging, that they often will pass and there will be something on the other side. So I think that, you know, the difficulty that I'm hearing a lot of kids are facing is just feeling like we're stuck, and we have been for, you know, a year and a half now, but we're stuck in this kind of perpetual place that doesn't feel good, and it feels like that there's no end to it. So I think it's, you know, it's up to us adults to reinforce the fact that this is not, you know, life as we know it forever, but for the given moment, it's a challenge.
Kids have been back in school for a few weeks, even a couple of months now in some places, and that must feel really good for them to be able to get back into an environment like that. Are things changing at all?
You know, it's interesting you mentioned that, because I'm hearing a wide range of responses. I think that it all depends on how children or how students were affected by COVID. So for some, being back in the classroom is a wonderful thing. They get to be with their peers. They get to be with their teachers and you know, in an environment that they thrive in. And for other students who may have been, you know, more inclined to be introverted, less social, students that were bullied, students that had challenges in school, for them, getting back into the in-person environment, I think, has been harder because, one, they're dealing with just the stresses of the unknown, but also that being, you know, working from home was a benefit to them. So it's really a mixed bag.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a couple of teenagers in my life, and I've asked them, what do you miss the most? And they always say, I miss my friends the most.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And for kids that don't have a lot of social connections at school, that's less of an issue than for kids that really thrive on being around peers and doing group activities.
We're talking today with Dr. Grace Bullock, Senior Mental Health Officer at the Oregon Department of Education. Now, the Oregon Department of Education is really prioritizing mental health. Let's talk more about why that is and how the state is addressing this.
Absolutely. You know, the Oregon Department of Education and our partners at the Oregon Health Authority really recognize that mental health is one of the cornerstones of education. So in order for students to learn and teachers to teach and, you know, families to thrive, we need to make sure that we're very intentionally thinking about how to create spaces where students can thrive and where their mental health is supported.
What does the research and data tell us about how to promote mental health, not only for kids, but for adults, too?
Well, I'm going to focus on one particular area of research because there is, you know, a vast body of research that we can draw from. But one of the findings that I think is most relevant, particularly in the era of COVID, is the importance of relationships and social connections. And we know from, you know, decades and decades of research that one of the best ways to promote and support our mental health is through safe, supported, caring relationships. And it's interesting, if you look at the research, you know, there are studies that look at the difference in an elderly residential home of adults who were randomly assigned to take care of a plant, and those adults who were taking care of a plant and had a connection even with a plant did better in terms of their health and well-being than adults that didn't. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a human. Many of us have four-legged friends that are a great source of emotional support, but having some kind of relationship and some kind of connection is really one of the main ways that we can promote and support our mental health, whether it's children or adults.
Yeah, that, I think everybody can relate to that. You know, when we're all trapped in our house, when we were quarantining a few months back, it was like, okay, this I feel the walls closing in. This is getting a little creepy.
Yes, it's so true. And, you know, I'm introverted by nature. So the first few months of COVID, I was thinking, hey, this is great. I get to work from home. You know, I don't have to deal with commuting. It's what a great situation this is. And I started noticing when I started feeling antsy about not seeing people, that was really a reflection point for me and thinking, wow, this must be really hard for the extroverts out there if I'm having this reaction.
Yeah, for sure. Dr. Bullock, you've been doing this work for a long time. Have you ever experienced anything like this, like the pandemic? Obviously,
absolutely.
None of us have, I don't think, but just in
no.
General terms.
Absolutely not. You know, I think the closest that I can come was the after effects of 9/11 and how that changed the dynamics of this country as we faced such a you know, a wide scale tragedy. But I haven't seen anything like this where we're all talking about, you know, the effects of the pandemic and how it's affecting our mental health. You know, we're all talking about things like vaccinations, which were never part of the social conversation before. So, no, I haven't seen anything like this.
And it seems to be going on for a long time. You know, like you just mentioned September 11th. That lasted in our conscience for a long time. But it seemed to fade away much more quickly than this pandemic is fading away. This hasn't really faded away at all.
No. And I think one of the biggest challenges with the pandemic compared to 9/11, which was, you know, a fairly isolated incident, is that we just don't know where it's going to go. And one of the most stressful things, or one of the things that causes us, humans at least, the most stress is not knowing what's going to happen in our environment. So not being able to predict and anticipate what's going to happen next. And that tends to create a feeling of helplessness or a lack of control, which for most humans is a source of stress because we just don't know how to anticipate or respond to what's coming next.
Now, we're about 18 months into the pandemic. Parents probably still need to talk to their children about certain things. Do you have any suggestions for how parents can talk to their kids about things that are going on?
That's an excellent question. And, you know, the answer is really dependent on the age of the child. So, for example, young children may not have as much of a sense of the larger context of the pandemic. They're just more they're more attached to the immediate, you know, why can't I see my friends or why haven't I seen my grandparents? And so for them, just explaining and creating what I call containers of safety, explaining what's happened in a developmentally appropriate way. So obviously not giving too much detail, but also I think for all age groups, reaffirming the fact that, you know, we're in this together. I'm creating a safe space for you. No, I can't anticipate what's going to happen, but we are here together and we're going to get through this together and it's going to be okay.
Are there some signs or behaviors that kids could be expressing that maybe lead parents to ask certain questions about their mental health? And how do they do that?
I think that, you know, all of us are different. So to create a kind of a generalization would be not wise on my part. What I often suggest to parents is to look for changes in behavior. So changes in things like sleep patterns, eating patterns, no longer wanting to hang out with friends, no longer getting pleasure out of activities that used to be enjoyable. Things like, of that nature that are a sign that something might be wrong. But I think that for all of us, and I'll speak for myself personally, changes in sleep and diet for a period of time, or feeling stressed or anxious or frustrated, those things are all part of being human. It's when they persist. When for parents, you're seeing, you know, your child's really acting a lot different than they typically would, that's when I would start, paying more attention to it.
Yeah, especially like during the pandemic, everybody's very stressed out. So your behavior could be a little bit different anyway because of the added stress. But if it's the extreme behavior, I guess, is what you're talking about, right?
Absolutely. And one of the things that we also know from the research is that there's a thing called contagion around emotions and around stress. So if we are around people that are stressed or around people that are, you know, emotionally, reactive or up and down, that those things tend to be contagious. And so it's important to be mindful of, you know, as a parent, what we're bringing and what we're putting into the situation, because sometimes children's behavior is actually a direct response to what we're bringing into the household as well. So it's important not just to focus on, oh, this is going on with my child, but also what is it within my child's environment that might be bringing this out?
Yeah, what's the family dynamic around all of this, right?
Absolutely.
We're talking today with Dr. Grace Bullock, Senior Mental Health Officer at the Oregon Department of Education. Now, are there some good examples of schools or school districts in the Portland metro area or elsewhere in the state that stand out as far as really addressing mental health?
I think there are many examples, probably far too many for me to list, but You know, earlier on in the school year, a lot of school districts really focused on creating spaces in their school buildings, you know, characterized by care and connection, prioritizing time to create relationships and, you know, really ease back into the transition rather than diving right back into education proper. I know that there are districts like Rainier School District, just north and west of you, that have built calm spaces and calm rooms and really prioritize giving both the staff and the students time and space if they're, you know, having emotional difficulties. A lot of districts up in your area have hired more social workers and school counselors thanks to the Student Success Act funds. There are examples in, you know, Hillsboro and Salem-Keizer where the districts have brought in folks to actually work with families as system navigators to help families deal with transitions and provide emotional support. And the Gresham Barlow School District, I believe they dedicated all of September to promoting mental health and providing emotional support. So there's a lot of beautiful examples, not only in the Portland metro area, but across the state.
That's really great that the school districts have hired additional mental health focused staff. That's really fantastic. What about educators and the teachers and the other staff? Are they having to step up and educate themselves on how to deal with this as well?
That's a great question, and it's also a tricky question. So I think that educators are much more sensitive to the emotional experiences of their students. I don't think that that's unique to COVID. What we have seen over the course of, you know, the last number of years is sadly an increase in students that are, you know, having emotional difficulties in schools. We can attribute that to a lot of different factors, but I think that there's much more of an awareness on the part of teachers that mental health is really important to attend to in their classrooms. And I think that, you know, one of the things that we really encourage when, you know, teachers or counselors or anyone, parents included, are trying to understand the behavior of a particular child is to really examine that behavior in context and not immediately jump to, this student is acting out, or, you know, this child is depressed, but really think holistically about why might this child's behavior be different.
It's definitely a challenge for everyone. It's kind of crazy.
It is, you know, and teachers and school staff are also dealing with, you know, the situations in their own homes and their own families with their own children and parents and illness and, you know, everything that you and I are experiencing in our home lives. Teachers are experiencing that not only in their personal lives, but also in their school buildings. So that they really have an additional challenge, I think, that they're facing.
A few minutes ago, you mentioned the Care and Connection campaign, which is something you started. So let's talk more about that. Tell me about the Care and Connection campaign.
The Care and Connection campaign is just, it's been a real joy to be part of it. It was inspired by a lot of the beautiful work that's been going on for years in many of Oregon's school districts where, again, as I mentioned earlier, districts are really prioritizing building relationships, creating space for students and staff to make meaning of their experience, which is particularly important right now because we're all experiencing so much that if we just kind of jam through life and pretend it's not happening, that's when we start seeing, you know, symptoms of depression and anxiety because we're not addressing the elephant in the room, for lack of a better expression. So what a lot of districts have done is they have, at the beginning of the school year, dedicated time specifically to creating relationship time, relationship building time, time for students to connect with each other, with their teachers, with their, you know, school principals, et cetera. And I think that that's really made the transition back to the school year much, well, I can't say much easier because I'm not a student, but easier than it could have been had we just jumped into business as usual and not paid attention to the need to create space for that to happen at the beginning of the school year.
Yeah, what's the experience been so far for students that you've encountered that are back to school full time now for just a few months? What has their experience been like so far?
You know, I've heard a range of experiences. I have a number of educator friends that I connect with regularly as my own touch points around the work that I do. A number of them said that this was probably one of the easiest transitions back to school this year because they took the time. They were seeing fewer behavior problems because students felt more supported and teachers felt more supported. But I have, you know, continued to hear stories of parents who've had, you know, kiddos, for example, who don't want to go to school and that are afraid to go to school, that are afraid of COVID. And so it's not a universal response. And I think that, you know, it speaks to the need for us to continue to prioritize mental health throughout the school year and beyond, because, again, we're still in the middle of this pandemic, and it's going to bring up a lot of stress and anxiety for many people.
Yeah. What have you guys learned? What has the school district and the Oregon Department of Education learned so far this year that you're going to carry forward and maybe become part of regular activity once the pandemic is over?
I think we've learned the value of care and connection and relationship building, and the necessity to build time and space for those activities because they are so essential to learning. I think that, you know, particularly before school districts and education departments, our business is to educate, and we're now recognizing that social determinants of health, things like, you know, food and housing and access to health care, et cetera, you know, access to mental health care, access to relationships and spiritual, you know, communities, those are really the things that are at the heart of what it is to be human and what we need in order to thrive. And so in order to really, again, create the conditions where students can learn and teachers can teach, we have to make sure that we're doing our best to have those things in place.
Well, it really sounds like Care and Connection is working here in Oregon. Do you think you could replicate this in other states? Or maybe not you, but it could be replicated in other places?
You know, we've been fortunate to have the opportunity to present this campaign and this work in a number of national arenas, and we've had quite a number of states that have been very interested in the work. Delaware had said that they wanted to replicate this. There are a number of other states that we've been talking to that are interested, and we have resources that we're sharing. They're all open access resources that we've created that we're sharing with whatever or whoever wants to use them. So it's exciting that states 3,000 miles away are launching similar campaigns.
Yeah, for sure. Do you have some tricks to maybe there's a student or even an adult that just really doesn't want to open up about how they're feeling? Do you have any advice on how to maybe help them open up a little bit more?
You know, that's a really interesting question because we all deal with the need to talk about our experience differently. And I think that in our culture, the expectation is that opening up is good, or that we should all be opening up and speaking about our experience, which is, you know, very much driven by the dominant culture that we live in. But there are many other cultures and many other, you know, individuals, myself included, who don't necessarily feel comfortable opening up about our experience. So I would say that it's important to give people space to show up in ways that they're comfortable. I think creating the space for that conversation is as important or maybe even more important than getting that information. Because when there's a trusting relationship, hopefully it will come over time. But if we probe and press, sometimes we're actually creating the reverse conditions where people do not want to talk. And I think that that's when we worry that we're creating the opposite effect that we're hoping to achieve.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Creating the space where you can feel comfortable, that seems like that's the place to open up.
Absolutely. And for parents, you know, it could be taking your kid for a walk when you're walking your dog or, you know, sitting down and playing a game, hanging out, watching TV. A lot of these things are very informal and don't need necessarily the, you know, sit down at the table face to face having that conversation.
Yeah.
A lot of that information, again, is exchanged just through taking time to care and connect, and it doesn't need to be something that's necessarily structured.
In the last little bit of time we have here, can you help us learn about some resources that are available for students and families that may be finding the return to school a little bit hard this year?
Absolutely. We have a website. It's oregon.gov/readyschool, And that website has a tremendous amount of resources for families in lots of different, you know, domains. There's public health information. There's educational information. We have a whole library, I'll call it, of mental health resources. We have Care and Connection campaign resources. There's a whole web page devoted to that. And then also, you know, your local school district or your local school most likely has its own web page that links to more local resources. And of course, most of the schools in Oregon, or at least in your area, have school counselors and other mental health professionals that can also connect you with resources if you're needing that. And of course, there's always the local county public health or behavioral health office as well.
You've given us really invaluable information today. I'd like to thank you for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
We've been talking today with Dr. Grace Bullock, Senior Mental Health Officer at the Oregon Department of Education. Thanks again. If you'd like to hear this interview again, just search for Let's Talk Portland on the Odyssey app. Let's Talk Portland is an Odyssey Portland public affairs program.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.